Please open your Bibles this morning to the Gospel of John, the last of the Gospels, and the 19th chapter, please. John's Gospel, chapter 19. We welcome all those who are in attendance this morning. We have some visitors with us. And this day is, or this year is not very old, and you've already made a great decision in being in the Lord's house on His day with the Lord's people. And if you're a member here, then you're where you're supposed to be, and we're glad for that. But if you're visiting, we certainly welcome you, and we want you to feel right at home with us, and hopefully you'll come back and see us again in the future. If we can help in any way with your spiritual growth, or if you have any Bible questions, we would consider it an honor to sit down with you and talk about that. Maybe you have questions about the lesson this morning. That'd be all right as well. We don't claim to be experts in anything other than we just want to know what the Lord has said in His Word and then practice what He has said, as Jerry has just so ably prayed for us. When you think about the Lord's time on the cross. I appreciate Gary's comments very much at the table a few moments ago. It's often pointed out, and I've heard sermons along these lines, and I've preached a couple of myself, how thoughtful Jesus was for other people while He was on the cross. He said some words that showed He cared about others, even in the very midst of His suffering and His punishment. In John 19, verses 26 and 27, you'll see where Jesus was being thoughtful of His mother. And He said to John, "Behold thy mother." And then He said to His mother, "Behold thy son." And at that moment, Mary was committed to John's care. And Jesus was concerned about His mother. Jesus said of His crucifiers in Luke 23, "Father, forgive them, they do not know what they do." Had a forgiving spirit about those who clamored for His blood and nailed Him to the cross. Then, of course, also in Luke 23, the anonymous thief. "Today you shall be with me in paradise." He was thoughtful of him as well. Well, I want to pick an example of where Jesus was thoughtful of someone else, but it happened before He was crucified. Not while on the cross, but right in the very hours prior to that. And again, this study hopefully will show Jesus or depict Jesus thinking more of someone else besides Himself. And then, of course, that would be Pilate. Jesus and Pilate had this interaction. And often when we get to the gospel records and we want to study about the crucifixion of Jesus, and all of the gospel records record this monumental moment in history. There's never been a more historical moment in the history of humanity than the crucifixion of the Lord. But Pilate was involved in this incident. Several individual incidents played a part in this grand episode of the crucifixion of Christ. And I'm convinced, as we look primarily from John's Gospel, Jesus, in these hours, He tried to help Pilate. Because like you and I, Pilate, he had a soul. He needed to be saved. And how thoughtful Jesus was of him. And we'll talk about Pilate's character and his behavior and how Jesus tried to reach this Roman official. Pilate, as I said, was right in the middle of these events and he chose his response. And all any of us can do, especially since we live this side of the crucifixion, all you can do and all I can do is respond to the cross. That's all we can. We can't go back in time and change it. We just read the narrative. We think about it. It's recorded for us. And I've got to do something with that. And so do you. How would you respond to it? Let's first talk about their meeting. That is to say, when they came together. And when I say that it was not a planned meeting, I mean in the sense that they got together and said, "Hey, let's get together and talk about this." It wasn't planned that way. But perhaps it was planned in the sense it was by divine providence that that their paths would cross and they would come together. Look with me in John 19 and verse 11. This is Jesus answering a statement of Pilate that we'll notice in a few moments in verse 10. But Pilate basically said, I have authority over you. Don't you know what I can do to you for you? I'm in charge of this here. Jesus says, verse 11, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin. But Jesus admits, providence has brought us together. God gave you this authority. And we're also mindful of Peter's words in his first gospel sermon, Acts chapter 2. The predetermined and foreknowledge of God brought Jesus to the cross where he was nailed by the hands of godless men. So all four gospel records recorded, that is to say, the interaction between Jesus and Pilate. But more than the synoptic gospels, which are the first three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John's account, which is why we're sticking with John, it really gives us an insight into these two characters, the character of Pilate and the character of Christ, and how they interacted. Matthew, Mark, and Luke don't record it much, at least not as much as John does. Now, I want to share with you an interesting observation. As we go through this, hopefully you'll see this as well. As they interacted more, as they discussed, as they had discourse, as Jesus stood before Pilate, it became, I'm convinced, less and less of a judicial moment for Jesus. And it became more and more a personal crisis for Pilate. It's as if, eventually, it was no longer Jesus on trial before Pilate. It was rather Pilate on trial before the Lord. And Jesus tried to reach him. Now, we know how it played out. And we'll go over that again as the record bears that out. But Jesus, as he will be after this takes place, on the cross, thoughtful of Mary, assigning her to John's care, and thoughtful of his crucifiers, begging the Father not to hold this sin against them, and thoughtful of the anonymous thief who turned to him in penitence, and Jesus said, you'll be with me in paradise. Jesus was being thoughtful of Pilate. And in these waning hours, right before the cross, tried to reach this unbeliever with the gospel. Now, let's talk about Pilate, his behavior or his character. I think there are some things that we see in John's record that shows he's struggling as a man thrown into this episode, in this moment in time when stood before him the Son of God. Not that he believed he was the Son of God, but here's this one brought before him. In the first place, he was reluctant to participate. We see that, I think, from John's gospel. This time it's the 18th chapter, starting with me in verse 28. The Jews are now leading Jesus from Caiaphas. The council has given their blessing, if you want to call it that. They agreed that he needed to be put to death for blasphemy. So they go from Caiaphas. Now they got to get Rome's blessing because the Jews cannot put anybody to death. So as verse 28 picks up, they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, or the residence of the governor, which of course is Pilate. And it was early. And they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Therefore Pilate went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have even delivered him to you. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we are not permitted to put anyone to death to fulfill the word of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. So they've got to get Pilate's blessing. This was a formal routine. A formal complaint had to be charged or levied against the prisoner, which is the Lord. And so Pilate comes out and asks, what's the charge? You know, this is the drill. This is the routine we always go through when the prisoner is brought before the Roman governor. And the Jews' response indicates clearly to me they weren't interested in an examination. Their minds were already made up. Their response in verse 30, if this man weren't an evildoer, we wouldn't even be bothering. We wouldn't even be here. We wouldn't have brought him to you. So really, they didn't want him to be examined. They came to have their sentence confirmed by Pilate. He needs to die. He's guilty of blasphemy. He's guilty of high crimes as we see them. And so Pilate, you need to play along with us and sentence this man to death. But Pilate was not a willing participant, if you will. Again, look at his words in verse 31. Do it yourself. Take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. In essence, he's saying, you finish what you've already started. I'm not going to have anything to do with this. And the Jews, of course, responded, we can't put anybody to death. So already they have showed their hand at the end of verse 31. They want execution. Now, perhaps Pilate knew that. He eventually will, of course. But this early? But they say, we want you to confirm our sentence. And I think this reluctance on the part of Pilate is seen throughout. Verses 38 and 39, again, Pilate said, I find no guilt in him. Why must we do this? I don't see anything in him deserving. He even tried to plug Jesus into the annual ritual of releasing a condemned prisoner. Well, let it be Jesus this year. But no, as Gary pointed out, they cried for Barabbas, an insurrectionist and a murderer. Chapter 19, verse 1, Pilate perhaps thought, well, if I'll scourge him, beat him up a little bit, and present them to this bloodthirsty mob, maybe that'll satisfy him. And of course, it did not. So initially, he was very reluctant to participate. But even more so than that, I want to focus on what I'm going to call an uneasiness inside of Pilate. He struggled with what to do with this moment. Notice in John's record, and we'll go through these rather quickly, he made 7 trips in and out of the praetorium. From Jesus to the crowd. Back to the Lord, back to the crowd, back to Jesus, back to the crowd. Inside and out of the hall. Notice this record. The first instance, as we just read in John 18, verse 29, he goes out to receive the initial accusation. Then he goes back inside and he summons Jesus for questioning. That's in John 18 and verse 33. And Jesus comes into him and he asks the question, are you the King of the Jews? The discussion ensues. Verse 38 of John 18, he goes out back again to the Jews and reports his findings. I don't find any guilt in him. And that's when he offers in verse 39 about the annual custom, we can release a prisoner. How about it be this man this year? Well, inferred in chapter 19, verse 1, though it doesn't say, I believe it's strongly inferred, and I'll show why in a moment, Pilate goes back in, and he orders the scourging. And I say he went in because chapter 19, verse 4 says he came back out, so he would have had to go in to come back out. And this is when he presents the man, verse 4 of John 19. Behold, I am bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him. Jesus then came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, behold the man. Here's this bloodied, scourged, weakened individual. Here's the one you're so concerned about. So that was coming back out to the Jews. But back in again, chapter 19 and verse 9, and by this time we see that the Jews have said, we have a law, and that law, and by that law, he ought to die because he made himself out to be the Son of God. Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid, and he entered again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, so back in again for more questioning, and then finally, chapter 19, verse 13, he comes back out, sits on the judgment seat, and gives the final verdict when he grants Jesus to the crowd for crucifixion. So in and out, in and out, in and out. All this back and forth. Pilate was very uneasy about this. Now, I say that when, for quick reference, you look at Acts chapter 18. Paul is in Corinth, and the Jews there, always following Paul around, dogging him everywhere he goes, wanting to silence the great preacher. And the Jews also then bring charges against Paul before Gallio, the proconsul of Achaia. And pretty much Gallio said on that occasion what Pilate says here. You take him and judge him according to your own law. I'm not going to get involved in all this. And that's what Pilate said. That's what Gallio said. And the Jews took Sosthenes, the record says, and beat him. He was the ruler of the synagogue. Beat him in front of Gallio, and the record says Gallio took no notice of it. It didn't do a thing for him. So Roman governors, proconsuls, procurators, they couldn't have cared any less about these religious matters. As long as you kept the peace, they didn't care what you did. But Pilate here is showing an interest by going in and out and questioning and trying to find out. So he's very uneasy at this moment. And it's in that I think Jesus picks up on that, and that's how they have their discussion. Of all this that's going on, there are two things that I'm convinced that Pilate was sure of. Number one, he knew Jesus was innocent with respect to the charges that were being levied against him. Because on more than one occasion, he said, I don't find any fault in him. There's no guilt. He was sure of that. But he was also sure, as Mark tells us, of the reason for Jesus even being there. This is not in John's record, but in Mark 15, verse 10, Mark writes that Pilate knew the Jews had brought the Lord there because of envy. That was the real motive. And Pilate knew that. Pilate sensed that. Now, also in this behavior of Pilate, I believe Pilate showed some varying emotions. This is a turbulent moment. Emotions were tense. Pilate's right in the middle of it. Again, as Gary alluded to in his talk at the table, the chief priests were working the crowd really well, inciting them up, getting it up to a fever pitch, clamoring more and more for crucifixion, clamoring more and more, let us have Barabbas. What emotion did Pilate show? Initially, he seemed bothered. Back in chapter 18 and verse 33, when he goes into the praetorium for the first time and Jesus is then brought into him, his question, so you're the king of the Jews? Are you the king of the Jews? He saw the implicit charge of treason was false. He knew that. So he seems a little bothered by having to be thrown into the mix in all this. Then I think he indicates some indignation on his part. Jesus answers his question in verse 34. When Pilate asks, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answers verse 34. Are you saying this on your own initiative? Or did others tell you about me? And Pilate's response, verse 35, I'm not a Jew, am I? Or I'm not a Jew. I have nothing to do with this. He seems somewhat put off with the Lord's response. Your nation and the chief priest delivered you to me. What have you done? Now he must deal with this. At first he didn't want to. Now he doesn't take kindly to Jesus' words in verse 34. So now he deals with this as he would any other matter, being the high Roman official. Pilate, as Rome was, Rome knew that the Jews did not want their presence there. And here's this ethnic minority, as Rome saw them, who wanted Rome expelled, that they be left alone again to rule themselves and make their own decisions. And Pilate had to constantly tolerate them just to keep peace in the region. If there was civil unrest among the Jews, Rome would blame Pilate because he's the governor of the region. his responsibility to make sure that peace and order prevailed. So he seems somewhat indignant. Then eventually he seems curious. Verse 37, after Jesus answers him in verse 36, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Then Pilate asked the question, "So you are a king?" Curious. And Jesus will answer him again in verse 37. "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Possible cynicism, verse 38. When Jesus said, "You say rightly I'm a king, and for this reason I've been born and come into the world to testify to the truth," Pilate's reply was, "What's truth?" Now, we don't know his facial expression. We don't know the tone of his voice. He could have said it like, "Truth. What's truth?" And we recognize that in our own culture, living in the state of relativism that we live in, the absence of absolute truth. There is no truth, our culture says. Perhaps Pilate was curious. Truth? Tell me more about truth. Whatever his mood was, he was showing these various emotions. And then we also see outright fear in his heart. As John now records us in the 19th chapter, again, more ensued, this in and out interchange between Pilate with Jesus and the crowd. The 7th verse again, chapter 19. "The Jews answered him," that is Pilate, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." And it's that last phrase that now grips Pilate, "the Son of God." "Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. And he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, 'Where are you from?'" Now, why ask that question? Where are you from? Jesus gave him no answer. Well, the Romans, and this has been historically recorded, it's not found in the Scripture, but historical, secular evidence supports this statement. Pilate's concern here about being the Son of God would not be blasphemy like the Jews' concern was. That's their concern. They didn't accept Jesus as the Messiah. Blasphemy. But when Pilate heard this, he didn't think along those lines. The Romans believed that the gods would often come down among men, but not God, Jehovah, but the idols, the Roman gods, would come down among men and would have intercourse with humans and have offspring and be among the people and work great signs and do great feats of amazement and wonder among the people. And the Romans feared those individuals as they perceived them. And perhaps when Pilate heard this, the Son of God statement in verse 7, he's now afraid of this and goes back inside, and that's the purpose of his question, "Where are you from? Are you perhaps one of these divine-like beings that the Romans believed would come down and dwell and interact with humans from time to time?" And finally, we see this emotion, what I'm going to call frantic fear, maybe even terror, in his own heart in verse 10. He asked Jesus the question in verse 9, "Where are you from?" The Lord gave no answer. He was silent. And Pilate said to him, verse 10, "You do not speak to me." Some versions say, "Answer me." And Greek experts, Greek grammarians, tell us that that word "me" in verse 10 is emphatic in the Greek language. As if Pilate is saying, "Answer me. I'm asking you these questions, and you're saying nothing." He's terrified at this moment. Pilate's not getting anywhere in this exchange. He knows he must make a decision. It's the case is before him. And Jesus, well, he's already spoken some, but now he's not saying anything. "Answer me. Do you not know that I have authority to release you and have authority to crucify you, then the verse we read earlier, verse 11, Jesus says, well, you have this authority. It's been given to you from above. That's why you're in this position. So Pilate is having no success finding a way out of this dilemma. So here was a man, Pilate. He struggled over what to do with this other man, the God-man, Jesus. He wanted to release him. And as we've already been through, these trips in and out of the praetorium, going back and forth, he's trying to find an out to please this crowd, but also to save himself. And he's getting more, as I see him, he's getting more and more frustrated. Because really, he lacks the moral courage to do the right thing and release the Christ. Now that's Pilate's behavior. Let's look now quickly at Jesus' behavior. Here's the other character in this exchange. You read the responses of Jesus. You see one who's steady and calm. Always composed. The Lord didn't get excited. He didn't fear. He didn't worry about His predicament. Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen. He knew exactly what was going to happen. He had to die. There's no illusions on the part of the Lord regarding His release. The last part of verse 9 of John 19, He says nothing. Makes us think of the prophecy in Isaiah 53. As a lamb silent before its, or led to the slaughter, as a sheep that is silent before its shearers, He opened not His mouth. Now, how many of us, if we were in this situation, wrongfully accused, led away on some trumped up charges, and we're before some high official who has our fate right in the palm of his hand, how much would we clamor and say, now look, this is all, I'm being framed. It's not true. None of this is true. I'm being falsely accused. You need to let me go. I think we would more or less argue along those lines. And Jesus doesn't do that. He's in complete control of himself in this situation. At this meeting, Pilate's soul is hanging in the balance. And Jesus, I believe, is focused on that and his death more than he is on himself and being released. At one moment, it seems to me, and back in chapter 18, that Pilate seemed interested, showed a little bit of interest. Verses 36 and 37 that we read a few moments ago, when Pilate says, I'm not a Jew, when Jesus said to him what's recorded in verse 34, he says, your own nation. And the chief priest delivered you to me. What have you done? Now, Jesus doesn't answer the question specifically along those lines. He gives a more thoughtful answer. A more, may we say, an eternally focused answer. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, if this was about a carnal concern, then my servants would take up arms. They would fight. They would storm the praetorium and fight to the death to have me released. But that's not going to happen. I would not be handed over to the Jews, but as it is, my kingdom isn't of this world. And Pilate then his question, so you are a king. Show some interest. And Jesus says, you say correctly, yes, I am a king. For this I have been born. That is, to be a king. And for this, I have come into the world to set up my kingdom, to bear witness again, or of, to testify of the truth. Jesus is trying to reach him at this moment with thoughts about the kingdom and truth that can even save Pilate if Pilate will proceed on in interest and listen to Jesus teach. Notice in verse 36, Jesus doesn't say that Rome's the enemy. Jesus says the Jews are the enemy. I would not be handed over to the Jews. Yes, I'm a king, and I'm here to set up a kingdom, but we're not going to set this kingdom up to overthrow Rome. That's not going to be the purpose. We can have our kingdom established and Rome still be the ruler of the world, which it was. You keep reading the Acts record. Rome did rule the world. And the Lord's kingdom did exist on the face of the earth. So it wasn't to supplant Rome and make it not exist anymore. So he did speak of a kingdom. He was not trying to supplant Caesar politically. And that's what Pilate was afraid of. That was Pilate's concern all along, was politics, particularly his own future, his personal future. The problem in all this, it wasn't Jesus. He wasn't posing the problem, nor was it a hard moment. Sometimes life is full of hard moments. No, the obstacle in all this was Pilate himself. He was the problem with respect to Pilate. Because as we said earlier, this episode, this exchange between Jesus and Pilate became less and less of Jesus on trial before him and more that Pilate is on trial before Jesus in a much more important and serious way. Remember, Pilate said himself he was convinced of Jesus' innocence, but he didn't have the courage to do the right thing. He could have kept the crowd at bay, and though they were calling for the blood of the Lord, he could have said, I'm not doing it. I'm releasing him. And that's just it. But he wasn't going to do that. So he invented a compromise to save himself. He had Jesus scourged. And hopefully, as he thought, that will satisfy this mob. We read chapter 19, verses 1 and then 4 and 5 earlier. Drop down to verse 12. Pilate again. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release Jesus. But the Jews cried out saying, if you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. And when they said that, that did it for Pilate. That was it. The ensuing verses, he comes out, takes his place on the judgment seat, and pronounces sentence. Behold your king, verse 14. They said, crucify him, away with him. Shall I crucify your king, verse 15. The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. Well, they didn't really believe that. But they said it for the moment to get what they wanted. And Pilate delivered Jesus over to be crucified. He chose to save himself. So there's how these two characters interacted in this defining moment. So as we bring this to a close, I want you to think about Pilate's own attitude, how we see a decline as the episode goes from start to finish. He was forced to choose. And really, so are you and I. We must respond. We must choose what to do about the crucifixion of Christ. He became, increasingly, it seems to me, he became interested in Jesus, but not enough to walk away from the political ramifications of the moment. When they said, we have no king but Caesar. And if you let him go, you're no friend of Caesar. Pilate knew what that meant. He would be in trouble with the capital back in Rome or back in Italy. And that was not a risk he was willing to take. His own political future was at stake. So despite Pilate's fear, Jesus still showed real concern for him. Did Jesus die for Pilate? Well, of course he did. 1 John 2 and verse 2. We often read verse 1 when John says, these little things, or my little children, these things I write to you that you may not sin. If anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. He himself is a propitiation for our sins and not for ours only, but also for those of the whole world. That would include Pilate. Jesus died for Pilate too. But this meeting between the Son of God and Roman governor, it's not so locked in time that it only has applications for Pilate and for Jesus. more so for Pilate. We won't be deciding Jesus' fate today, but we must make our choice. And here we sit today. The Lord has allowed this day to come, and the Bible still forcefully proclaims what happened. Jesus going to the cross, going through this process of, maybe call it just the legalities of the crucifixion. And Pilate was involved. Pilate was in the middle of it. Pilate made his choice. But you and I must make our choice as well. What will your decision be? What will my decision be? Two things that we can do like Pilate. Do you have the moral courage to respond to the Christ of the cross? Pilate didn't have that. He did. He could have summoned it up and acted in the responsible and the correct way, but he didn't. He had other concerns, other interests that he felt more beholden to. Or will you be like Pilate and look for some way out? And some who are here this morning who need to respond to the gospel call, you keep delaying. You keep putting off your needed response. And what you're doing is you're continuing to find this way out. And you cannot do that. But you cannot keep doing that and there not be consequences to that choice. Don't be like Pilate. And look for a way out of this moment. Jesus died for you to save your soul. And He wants you to come live with Him. He's your Creator. He's also your sacrifice. And He wants to be your King. But He will be your judge at the end, whether you obey Him or not. So summon up your moral courage this morning if you've not obeyed the Lord. Respond to humanity's greatest sacrifice. Jesus bled and died for you and for me, that our sins might be remitted, that we can be forgiven and saved. Though we're not worthy, Jesus loves you enough that He died for you. Don't be a Pilate. Be one who responds thankfully and gratefully to the death of Christ. Would you come? We'll sing our hymn to invite you this morning.